Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Hey, and welcome to The Short Stuff. I'm Josh, and there's Chuck, and this is Short Stuff, so let's get going. And Chuck, I have to say, if I'm grateful for one thing to not have one thing, it's an infant right now, because I can't imagine the stress of having an infant right now here in the United States.
Yeah, if you have an infant right now and you are not able to breastfeed for one reason or another, it probably is stressful because there's an infant formula, baby formula shortage, as everyone knows. I got to thank our old colleagues at How Stuff Works and Alicia Hoyt for this very timely article. But I was thinking the other day, I was like, well, what did they used to do? Because baby formula is pretty new.
Yeah.
And not, and you know, mothers have not, you know, it's not like not being able to breastfeed is a new thing. Mm-hmm. There have always been conditions that could lead to that. Or, you know, some people just don't want to breastfeed. Mm-hmm. Or, like in our case, you adopt a kid, you don't have the option of breastfeeding. Mm-hmm. So what did they used to do? And I guess the first thing we should talk about is wet nurses.
Yeah, because that's the obvious idea. I mean, the wet nurses go back for like 4,000 years at least, where women were hired, or if they were enslaved, they would be forced to nurse babies. Usually it was associated with the elite, though, right?
Yeah, and I did some more research on this, and there's even a book about the exploitive nature in the history of wet nursing, because it seems like lesser and lesser, it wasn't just like, oh, it's just a job you can have. And more, it's like, well, I've got a lot of money, I'm not interested, so you do it, or you're an enslaved person, so we're going to take advantage of you by forcing you to do so. It seems like it's got a pretty exploitive, ugly past, but it still happens. There are, technically, there are still wet nurses you can hire, but it seems like, from what I researched, the sharing of breast milk these days is way more casual among friends and family. Like, hey, this mom is busy working, so their mom friends might chip in and help and pump and dump, and you can, here's my breast milk, you can have it for this week, you're really busy. It seems to be more of breast pumping, although there is, you know, there are still friends and family that are comfortable with saying, like, no, you can just breastfeed my child, that's great, it's natural, it's lovely and beautiful.
Right. It's not exploitive in that sense at all.
Right. Like, things really changed post-Civil War, it seems like, with the wet nursing.
So, and we talked also about milk banks where, like, you might have, you might feed your baby milk from another person who you might never meet, who just donates her extra milk because she can and wants to. We talked about that in our, either our breastfeeding or bottle feeding episode. Remember that two-parter that we
did?
Yeah. Those were good.
Those were real good.
Yeah. I think they still stand up, too. So if you want to know more about infant formula, go check that out. Or breastfeeding, go check the other one out. But so if you didn't have access to a wet nurse, Chuck, what did you do, hot shot? What did you do?
Milk a donkey.
Yeah, that's right. Hold still, donkey.
I joke, but that's actually true. They, you know, obviously animal milk is something that we drink. Some people do, at least. I like cow's milk. But they would give kids cow's milk. But in other places, depending what animals you had around, could be a donkey or a goat or a horse or something.
Yeah, sheep, pigs. And any mammal makes milk, even Robert De Niro.
You could milk me, Greg.
That's right. So that makes sense. I mean, yeah, milk from another animal, it's probably a pretty good alternative, especially if milk from humans is unavailable for one reason or another. But they also came up with other methods, I guess starting in the 16th to 18th century, where they would create something called pap. And it was basically like milk toast or cereal, wet cereal with water. And they would feed it to a baby using a special device called a pap boat, which, if you look it up, it's a gravy boat. They would use a gravy boat to feed an infant milk toast.
Right. They would clean the gravy out. Right. Put the BAP in, and it would be a BAP boat.
Right. There you go.
The problem here, though, is this was before they knew about sterilization and things like that. And so that was the big problem. It wasn't as much of the nutrients that the baby was getting, although that was a factor. But as far as infant mortality and kids growing up with deficiencies, most times it was because, I think, of the fact that these PAP boats weren't very sterile that they were shoving in the kid's mouth.
Yeah, it was like the Stuff You Should Know TV show's craft services table. Remember that?
That's right. You know, I finally sat my daughter down. We watched one of those the other day.
Oh, yeah? What'd she think?
She was like, I mean, she kind of gets that I do a job where people know who I am and that I've been on TV and stuff. But I think when she actually saw it and saw us, she was a little knocked out. I think she thought it was pretty cool.
Was she like, wow, Josh is really wearing a lot of makeup?
No, I said that.
Right. She's like, oh, no, I see. I see.
Exactly.
It. Couldn't miss it, Dad.
So the first infant formula, or should we take a break?
Yeah, let's take a break.
All right. Then we'll talk about the first infant formula.
No, wait. Yeah.
Okay. We'll be right back.
And now a word from the show's sponsors at Betterment. Let's talk about hustle culture, shall we? You know, the whole rise and grind, go big or go home thing? It's a lifestyle that might not be for you.
That's right, but one that your money can handle thanks to Betterment. Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle.
How? Good question. Their automated technology optimizes your investments again and again. With Betterment, your money is taking ice baths at 5 a.m. while you get your well-deserved rest. Your money downs protein smoothies and automatically reinvests your dividends, all before you head out the door. Your money is a workaholic.
But you don't have to be, because you've got Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. So visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Okay, the first, are you still humming?
No.
All right, the first infant formula attempt, as far as like, hey, let's try and duplicate human breast milk, was in 1865, and a gentleman named Justus von Liebig. And that is the first baby formula. It was cow's milk. It was malt flour, wheat, and potassium bicarbonate. Mm-hmm. And then I think, when was that? 1865. A couple of years later, another pharmacist named Henri, is it Nestle or Nestle?
Nestle. That's the Nestle guy.
I figured, but is it pronounced Nestle in French?
I think so.
All right. They launched the, well, why don't you say it, Mr. Frenchie?
Farine lactée Nestlé, and it means plain flour milky Nestlé.
Yeah, and it was the same thing basically, but it was just easier to mix together and get out the door. And then I think only like 15 years later or so, there were up to close to 30 brands of infant food on the shelves.
Yeah, because von Liebig really kicked something off. And also, we got to hat tip that guy a little more. He also gave us beef bouillon cubes and synthetic fertilizers, among many, many other things. So he definitely changed the world quite a bit.
Interesting. The 1950s, I think, is when things really came around as far as formula. Like before that, in the 30s and 40s, they would recommend like evaporated milk or something once they figured safely canning things. But in the early 1950s is when the first liquid formula was invented that you didn't have to mix up.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, just a lot of mothers were just like, all right, I'd rather use this than breastfeed. And then I think in the 70s and 80s, it came back around a little more to mothers wanting to breastfeed more. And as Alicia Hoyt points out, we now live in a time, thankfully, where there's at least shouldn't be any judgment either way on how people want to feed their babies.
Yeah, because I think you can trace that to different waves of feminism as well. Like that formula freed women in a lot of ways from being shackled to the household necessarily. Like, sorry, you got to raise the kid or else it's going to starve. No, it's like, no, here, Dad, here's some formula. Even you can do this. Even you can do this without screwing it up, Roger. Yeah. And then as feminism kind of took different forms and it was like, hey, let's stop being judgy or let's stop forcing women to find, you know, to all follow one direction as feminists, it kind of came back around. And then finally we reached this kind of non-judgmental state. And by the way, we need to do an episode on feminism once and for all.
Yeah, that would probably be at least a two-parter because of all the different waves of feminism, I would think.
Yeah, for sure.
Maybe one per wave.
Oh, boy, that'd be a lot. That's like a mini-series.
All right, well, we'll see. But we should talk about whether or not, because, you know, obviously with the shortage right now, there are probably desperate mothers out there, especially in lower income brackets, that are thinking, should I make my own infant formula? And sort of generally, experts say that's not a good idea for a lot of reasons.
Well, yeah. I mean, infant formula today is heavily regulated. There was an act called the Infant Formula Act of 1980, which is described as one of the most specific and detailed acts ever passed by Congress that sets a lot of standards for maximum levels of nutrients, minimum levels of nutrients, you know, what constitutes adulteration, how a recall follows. It's really specific to like make sure that formula is as safe as it gets. And so it's really heavily formulated. It's technically an ultra processed food, it'd be a group 4 food, by the way, but it's like really scientifically calibrated. And you just can't do that at home with homemade ingredients.
Right. I'm sure there are recipes that probably include things like cow's milk, generally.
And rose quartz crystals.
Generally vegetable oil, lactose. But like you said, there are just a whole host of nutrients that they have settled on as like, hey, we know how to make baby formula. So, because I think in the old days, like the stuff they were doing, it would plump a baby up just fine. But they were not getting the nutrients they needed. And it's like, right. Back then it was like, oh, you got a big, round, chubby, healthy baby.
With and that dark circles under his eyes.
Yeah, and that wasn't always the case. So now they've really, thankfully, honed it down to something that they say you shouldn't replicate at home. And I don't think this is a case where it's just like big formula squashing the idea that you could do this yourself. It seems like a genuine safety issue.
Yes. And I should point out that we have enough self-perspective that we realize we've done a complete 180 about face on ultra-processed foods and made-at-home foods in this episode.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Compared to our ultra-processed foods episode.
That's a good point.
It is a good point.
And if that one hasn't come out yet, you have it to look forward to.
Yeah, exactly. You'll understand a lot better when that episode comes out.
That's right.
You got anything else?
I got nothing else. They say don't do it. I really just, my heart goes out to anyone out there that's stressed out about trying to find formula, and hopefully that can be corrected soon.
Yeah, that has to be like a deep, profound, very unique form of stress.
I can't imagine. Yeah.
Yeah. So hang in there, everybody. If you have a story about that, especially if you have tips or techniques that are proven and scientifically based, maybe send them in and we'll try to share them with everybody. How about that?
Agreed.
Okay. Well, since Chuck said agreed, everybody, Short Stuff is out.
Stuff You Should Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.